कृष्णकर्ण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं परिजन सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नमाओं विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिन् इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे सो वी वेलकम ऑल द डिवोटीज हू हैव कम फॉर दिस संडे फीस्ट प्रोग्राम टू श्री राधा गोपीनाथ मंदिर वी आर ग्रेटफुल दैट ऑन ए डे व्हेन ऑल ऑफ यू कुड हैव टेकन रेस्ट एट होम यू हैव टेकन आउट दिस टाइम एंड यू हैव कम हियर टू द शेल्टर ऑफ श्री राधा गोपीनाथ सो वील ट्राई टू स्पीक समथिंग द टॉपिक फॉर डिस्कशन टूडे इज भक्ति विदाउट गाइडेंस क्वेश्चन मार्क कैन भक्ति बी प्रैक्टिस्ड विदाउट गाइडेंस कैन आई बिकम ए गुड डिवोटी ऑन माई ओन दिस इज द टॉपिक So we have few points which we'll elaborate on and just for those who would like to understand what is the flow of the class, we'll speak these points first. So the first thing which we'll speak on is, what is bhakti? The second is, why is guidance necessary? Third is, who can give us guidance? Fourth is, till what point of time is guidance necessary for us? And the fifth is, we'll speak about some examples. So to begin, the first topic is what is bhakti? To understand what is bhakti, let us take one example. A small child is born. In the beginning, when he is very mischievous, he usually is very attracted to electrical sockets. At every home, I have seen when a new child is born, they'll keep something in those plugs. So usually the father will tell him, if you put your hand here, you'll get a big shock. If you go outside this room, then there is some big rakshas there. You know all those stories? My neighbor, when I was a small child, was a Gujarati person. So he used to scare his children by saying, what is that? Sattar Singo Aose, something like that. I don't remember it now. But there is some concept in a Gujarati home of Sattar Singo, something like that. Anetane Khai Jase, something like that. Now I remember. So he is scared from venturing too far. As this child grows up, the father says, now you know where to put your hand and where not to put your hand. But now is the time to go to the school. So he says, you know, why to leave home? I am happy at home. He says, no, you should go to your home. And if you go to the school and study nicely, we'll give you some sweets. We'll give you a bicycle. Some reward is given to him. When he grows up, now that fear factor does not work. Now that reward also does not work. Now he is told, now you have to work. And now, you should work not for my benefit, but you should work so that you will get good money. So now it's your duty to put energy into your profession so that you can take care of your family nicely. So he does that. As he gets married after some time, he develops love and affection for his family. So ata griha kshetra sutapta vittir. He automatically, because he has affection for his family members, he no longer does things which were prohibited for him. Out of love and affection for his family, he actually puts a lot of hard work into his job so that he can get a promotion every year, he can earn a lot of good money, take care of his family. And out of duty for his children and wife, he gives a lot of time to them as much as is possible. So we went through four stages of a typical human being's life. And the factors that governed his life were initially fear, then reward, the third was duty, and the fourth was love. So one of our acharyas, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he presents that any religion in this world, it fits into one of these four levels. These are the four levels to achieve God: fear, reward, duty and love. So it seems every one of us is doing it. In our own lives, we are going through these four stages. So when it comes to loving Krishna, this is natural for me, no? Now Srila Prabhupada, in one of the lines in the Bhagavad Gita, he mentions, the process is very easy, but the application is very difficult. It means, although it seems to us, oh, I have also done this, fear, duty, reward, love. So now when it comes to bhakti, okay, Radha Gopinath is here, so now I also have to graduate from fear, duty, reward, love. It's not so easy. Just like an English teacher just doesn't teach A, B, C, so on till Z. After teaching that, the English teacher also teaches something called as punctuation marks. Punctuation marks means where to put a comma, where to put a semicolon, where to put a full colon, where to put a full stop. These are the ways in which you write speech. So as I'm speaking, at certain points, I'm giving a pause. On certain words, I'm putting an emphasis. If you want to write this, and if you just write something that I spoke just now, without any punctuation marks, it won't have that effect. It means a language is not just about the letters. A language has many fine points, which are expressed by those punctuation marks. In English, there is also something called as figures of speech. So there is something called as exclamation. There is something called as a metaphor. Metaphor means you explain something by giving examples. Exclamation means you speak something so big so that it draws the attention of people. So these are called ornaments of a language. When somebody is told, you go to an English school, and if he's a small child, he will think, oh, now the same boring stuff, A for apple, B for bat. But actually, if the teacher is a very good teacher, that will be covered in the first lesson. Afterwards, the teacher will teach how to make the language refined. So sometimes, in Maharashtra especially, there are some people from Pune and there are some people from Nagpur area. So it is said that people from Pune area, they speak very good Marathi. And people from other regions of Maharashtra, they may not be able to speak the same kind of Marathi. Now both people are speaking the same language. So what is the difference? The difference is in the words. The difference is in the expression. The difference is where to use which word. So what I'm saying is, although it seems to us language is just a collection of A, I, E, A to Z, it is much more than that. Similarly, when we say, oh, bhakti is all about loving Krishna. Yes. For somebody who wants to say, all of us is Indians. Somebody wants to say this, then English is very simple. But if you want to actually understand the fineness of the language, then it is difficult. And that is why many Indians find English very difficult to learn, where, you know, a group goes and there is a plural verb for a singular noun and there is a singular verb for a plural noun. So similarly, when it comes to bhakti, when we understand, you know what is bhakti? Bhakti is to love Krishna. So a foolish devotee feels, I am already loving Krishna. But an intelligent devotee understands, now there are fine things which I have to understand about loving Krishna. So, Krishna consciousness or bhakti is not just about loving Krishna verbally. It is based on commitment. It is based on struggle. It is based on honoring and understanding what is Krishna's intentions, what is Krishna's mind. It is about service. So, think about it. Very simple. When most of us have not learnt the art of loving those people around us who are visible to us. Are there some people in all of your lives who claim that you don't love them sufficiently? You don't have to raise your hand. You don't have to answer this question. Is there any one person in your life who says, you know what, you don't give me time sufficiently. You are not able to do justice to a relationship sufficiently. If all of us are saying yes, we should understand, to those who are living around us, to those who are visible to us, we are not able to do justice, we are not able to love them properly. How can we claim that I can love this person who is not even visible to me, who is not even perceptible to my dull senses? So if we have to go to counseling sessions, if we have to visit a psychiatrist to put life into a relationship in this material world, and the person with whom we are having a relationship, we can see. We can understand when that person is put off. When we can understand when that person is happy. How much more training, how much more guidance is necessary to learn to have a good, satisfying relationship with this person who is not visible to us, whose smile remains as it is to our dead eyes. How will we know when we do some seva, Krishna is happy, Krishna is smiling more? How do we know when we do some seva, Krishna is actually put off by my low quality seva? Because his smile, at least to my dull eyes, remains the same. So for this relationship in the material world, we need greater, fine training. For our relationship with Krishna, we don't require any training. It's simple. We require training. How to understand what to do now? To understand what to do, we have to understand one small concept. What is that? This is the concept of, this is an English word called paradigm. What is this paradigm? It sounds like a big word. It is not a big word. Paradigm is about changing everything we do, everything we think, the way we speak, the way we represent ourselves, the way we communicate with people, depends on a certain idea that I have strongly in my mind. That is my paradigm of life. And if you want to really do something to yourself, one way is to change on a very external level. Another way, which is much deeper, is to change the paradigm or change the foundation of your life. For instance, right now, in this water glass next to me, there is normal water. So tomorrow onwards, if I start drinking warm water, you cannot call it a paradigm change. Paradigm change would be when I tell the sound system department that I won't drink water during the class because it interrupts the class. For some moments it interrupts the class. I have stopped drinking water during the class. So that's a fundamental change. These small changes about the temperature of water cannot be called paradigm change. Yes? So we have to understand what is this concept of paradigm. We'll speak a small story. One English author called H.G. Wells, he is a famous person. At one point of time he wrote a story called The Country of the Blind. So this story describes that there was one person called Nunez. And this Nunez was on a journey. And as he was on a journey, he is going on a mountaineering hike or something. He is going through the jungles. At one point of time, he slips. And he goes down tumbling. He falls for a lot of time into a deep valley. And when he opens his eyes, when that fall is over, he understands he's fallen into some kind of a village which is surrounded on all sides by very tall mountains. And at least to his eyes at that time, there seems to be no way out. So he wants to return to his own home, but he can't. As he moves around in this village, he finds this village is very strange. None of the homes in this village have windows. All the roads, they are ending into dead ends. And he sees almost everyone in that village is blind. So he starts talking to somebody And that person explains that at one point of time, this is a imaginary story, this didn't happen in the real. So the story there, it describes that one time some Spanish people invaded this colony of people. They were simple villagers and they ran off. And it seems they also stumbled down this valley. And when they stumbled down this valley, there was some herb or something that they ate. And each of them caught a disease. The effect of the disease was blindness. So one by one, as the disease increased, everyone in this village lost sight. Generations of these people, they lived in this valley. It means after 5 or 6 generations, let's say after 200 or 300 years, there was not one single person in that village who had eyes. Moreover, it's not just that they had eyes. It's that their parents also did not have eyes. Their grandfather also did not have eyes. 6, 7 generations back, somebody had eyes. So, we all know we had 5 senses. 5 senses, knowledge acquiring senses. So one of them is the eye by which we gather knowledge. Now none of the people in this village, they had the 5th sense. They could smell, they could taste, they could hear and they could touch, but they could not see. So as this Nunez, who has eyes, starts living in this place, he wants to earn some money, so he starts working under a person called Jacob. So this Jacob gives him some work and he starts working under him. But he actually finds it very risky to explain to people that there is a whole new world out there which has vision. Flower is not just to be smelt. A flower is not just to be touched. A flower is to be seen also. But whenever he would try to explain it, people would say, what are you talking about? What is a color? What is green? What is red? Imagine a person who's never seen colors. So, as time goes by, this Nunez falls in love with Jacob's daughter. And now, out of his love for this woman, one time he actually becomes serious about explaining to his love the concept of vision. Now, she also loves him, but somehow when he starts explaining about the concept of colors and light and dark, sunrise and sunset, she feels he's gone crazy. So he is a very good person and he wants to share what he can see, to at least to the object of his love. But she calls him crazy based on this. She says, you know, you're just imagining things. This news leaks out that this Nunez has still not given up his persistence to describe something called as color. The village council, everything is normal in this village except vision. So the village council, they come together and they say, we won't allow this person to marry one of our girls. You know why? Because this person has some disease in his eyes. And the disease in his eyes has gone into his brain. And he keeps speaking something rubbish, something green, red. So they say, we won't allow such a heresy to happen in the village. A mad person cannot marry one of our girls. You know, she's so intelligent. She says, there is nothing called as color. So the original story, it says that the village council, it orders this Nunez, if you really want to marry her, then you have to pluck out this diseased eyes. And now Nunez has a choice in front of him. What should I do? So out of his love for this girl, he agrees to have his eyes plucked. On the day of the marriage, when this is going to happen, the story describes, in the morning, Nunez wakes up and he feels, is it really worth all this? That I am plucking out my eyes? And in one sense, it's not just a physical sacrifice of eyes, it is a sacrifice of my ideals. You know, I insist, I'm seeing something called as color, and these people, all of them together, are not ready to accept it. Should I do it? So on the day of the marriage in the morning, Nunez gets up and he runs off from that valley, eager to search for some way out of this country of the blind. So this is what we mean by having a paradigm. Just like the people in this village, they were completely convinced. And from their perspective, it was completely fixed. A man has only 4 senses. And anybody who speaks anything else than that is crazy. But we all know, no, eyes are something which are very valuable. In fact, in modern world, there is a saying, seeing is believing. There's so much importance on seeing in the modern culture. So, if you want people to change, Nunes was just trying to inform them about superficial changes. He was trying to tell them about color and all. It didn't sink in. He could not change the paradigm of those people. The paradigm of those people was, since we are 100 in number and all of us agree, we are right. And this one person who has a strange view, he is crazy. The paradigm was, if more people speak a lie, it is a truth. That was their paradigm, in other words. Similarly, all of us also, when we are living in this world, we have a certain paradigm. What is that paradigm? This paradigm has been given to us by our educational ancestors, by our school, by the media. What is that? You are this body. The more you give pleasure to this body, the more you pamper your senses, the more you will be happy. So when we come to spiritual life, and when we hear about concepts of bhakti and service and like that, somewhere there is some hitch in the heart. So what is he saying? What is he talking about, humility and servant of servant? Do you know what it means to go into the office today? And what, God forbid, if you tell your boss, you know what, from today onwards I am servant of your servant, of your servant. So imagine a person who is a little immature and he is listening to a class in which it is mentioned the right mood to advance in devotional services. Trinad, api, more than a trin, su, nichena. त्रिण से भी ज्यादा नीच है. अगर ये भाव होगा तभी हम भक्ति में आगे बढ़ेंगे. ये जब सुनेगा वो, उसके मन पे क्या बीतेगी? He was saying, this is ridiculous, this is impractical. So it's very important for us to understand, bhakti is on a different paradigm altogether. The fundamental concept of bhakti is, we are not this body, and forward from that point of philosophy. One time, one teacher, mathematics teacher, she was teaching a small child in school simple arithmetic. So she asked the small boy, Sunil, if you have 100 rupees and you go to your father and ask him for another 100 rupees, now how much do you have? So he says, 100 rupees. So the teacher says, you don't understand arithmetic. He says, you don't understand my father. You are on a different paradigm. I am on a different paradigm. On a much more serious note, we have an adult audience here. This is not just an audience of young boys. So, it is said, a foolish husband treats his wife with disregard like a slave. And then, he himself becomes a slave's husband. So what is a slave's husband? A slave. A foolish husband treats his wife with disregard like a slave and then becomes a slave's husband. An intelligent man treats his wife with respect like a queen and then becomes, yes, he becomes a king not by posing as a king. He becomes a king not by ordering his wife like a king. He becomes a king by treating his wife like a queen, because every king wife is a queen, is it not? How can there be a king who has a wife as a servant? That's an incompatible relationship. So this is what we mean by paradigm change. What we feel is, the more I become a boss, the more I will rise. No, because you are connected to that person. The more you boss on somebody, you are also stooping down to the same position. In order to get respect from people, we should learn to give respect to people. This is the paradigm of bhakti, which we don't understand, and that's why we keep hovering on the mental plane. No, all this trinadapi sunichena bhapre namrata, this is too much for me. So it means we are dependent on guidance. What is bhakti? Is bhakti not based on emotions then? Because love, we felt, is emotions. Yes, it is based on emotions. But emotions are like the background. In the foreground is perpetual, unselfish, selfless seva. We all know, the acharyas are saying, the charama shloka. Charama shloka means the highest concept presented in the Gita, is 18.66. So this is the most important and primary teaching of Lord Krishna in the Gita. What is 18.66? सर्वधर्मान् परित्यज्य मामेकं शरणं व्रज अहं त्वां सर्व पापेभ्यो इष्यामि मा शुचः. सो इफ यू सी द मोस्ट इंपॉर्टेंट श्लोका ऑफ द गीता, although Gita is bhakti, is not about emotions. The most important shloka of the Gita is giving you action, is telling you, you have to do something. Don't just keep talking, Krishna, I love you. Krishna, I really love you. Krishna, I love you more than anybody else. This is not there in the Charama shloka. The Charama shloka is, do something to show that. Express your love. And just one shloka behind that is 18.65. Does anybody know what is 18.65? I'll tell you what is 18.65. 18.65 is Manmanabhav Madbhakto Madhyaji Imam Namaskuru. This is the shloka about emotions. What is that? Always remember me. Offer your heart to me. Offer your obeisances to me. So the 18.65, if you see, is more about the internal state of heart. And 18.6 is surrender to me, giving up everything else. It is more about action. This is what we mean by saying, bhakti is not just about emotions. It is not just 18.65. It is not just action. Surrender to me. It is action based on emotions. That's why first Krishna speaks 18.65 and then he speaks 18.66. So bhakti means, yes, there are emotions to be cultivated in the heart. But just cultivation of emotions is not sufficient. We need practical training how to express those emotions. We need a paradigm change. Two things decorate a person. One is skills and the second is values. Skills means some things like some techniques of singing, dancing, writing. These are skills. Driving a car. You can go to a driving class and learn how to drive a car. You can go to a dancing class. The duration may vary, but it is a skill. Values means qualities, concepts like humility, simplicity, honesty, tolerance, and so on. More often what happens is in the outside world, advancement of a person is judged by his advancement in skills. And since all of us have come from that background, when we come to the temple, we feel to become a good devotee, I have to learn singing, especially better than this person. Yes? Because the outside world is saturated with competition. We carry that same baggage with us here. So what is advancement in bhakti? Advancement in bhakti is about singing better than the best. Somebody is already the best singer. As soon as I overtake him, I am the best. It does not matter whether I am the best by objective standards. In the outside world, I may be a loser number one. I may not be given a good chance to speak or sing anywhere. What matters is, this is my domain. My temple, my counseling group, my spiritual master group. And we start competing with devotees in terms of skills. But in bhakti, the paradigm is different. What is the paradigm? Here the paradigm is of values. What matters is not the way we sing. What matters is, what is the mood while we sing? Are we singing to attract the attention of the audience? Or are we singing to attract the attention of the Supreme Lord? And the Supreme Lord, you know, he does not listen to our voice, he's listening to our crying out. We have to cry out the holy name, we don't have to sing the holy name. One famous sage, if you can call him, long many years back, he says, this is language at that time, he says, Chiyuti ke pag nevar bandhe, so bhi sahib sunta hai. So chiyuti in that language means a cheeti. And nevar means ghungru. So this sadhu is saying, chiyuti ke pag nevar bandhe so bhi sahib sunta hai. If you tie ghungru to the legs of an ant, he can hear it. You don't have to do some external show. I won't speak the next line because some people will get offended. Yes, but if somebody is interested, we can talk privately. The essence of this line was, we don't have to show something. Krishna has very powerful ears. He does not need loudspeakers. Yes, but still we should use, because there are so many guests who come. There are some visitors who come who appreciate us by the sound of our voice. It's not that I'm asking you to neglect the skills. Point is, out of skills and values, more important is values. And many times, this understanding gets eclipsed.
We go into our original thought process. We feel it is all about skills. If any one of us has ever interacted with any senior devotee, very soon we understand this person is not even evaluating me, this person is not even checking me on the level of my skills. Actually, when we have a conversation with any senior devotee, to the extent to which we have such interactions, to that extent we will understand it is all about values. When some senior devotee talks to us, he is not looking at our face. He is not looking at how many shlokas we know. He is looking at what is our sincerity while practicing devotional service. Are we really struggling in our chanting? Similarly, the Lord also is looking at that aspect. Skills are very easy to learn. It's just a question of joining the right class. So if for learning skills, which are easier to learn, we need a class. To learn values, where are tolerance classes? Kalra Shukla tolerance classes. Chate simplicity classes. I haven't heard. If you have an address, please tell me. I want to learn simplicity. I want to learn humility. So if bhakti is based on the paradigm of values, where are these classes? These classes are conducted by advanced devotees in their own lives. These classes are not theory classes. These classes are practical classes. So that is why guidance is very important in devotional service. Why are we here in this material world? We are here in this material world not because we belong here. We are here in this material world. Originally we belong to the spiritual world, but we committed some mistake. It could be as simple as curiosity. It could be as complicated as envy for Krishna or anything in between. But all of us originally were with Krishna. That's why we say going back home, back to Godhead. It means originally we were with Krishna and now we are here. Is it a good choice to be here? No. But we are here. It means somewhere we did some mistake. Yes, it could be a small mistake, it could be a big mistake. All of us have to agree. We committed a mistake and that's why we fell down from the spiritual world. So my dear friends, if we could commit a mistake in the spiritual world, am I wrong if I say we will definitely commit a mistake in the material world? When the whole atmosphere is pure, we committed a mistake and we fell down. So in the material world, what makes us so sure? Prabhu, I know what is what. I don't need your guidance. I am on my own. Me and Krishna. So anybody who is little sensible, he understands, I am dependent on guidance. I will survive on guidance. I cannot go on this path of bhakti on my own. It means bhakti and guidance are synonymous terms. You cannot have bhakti without guidance. Nobody can say, even though I don't get guidance, I am going on in my bhakti. It's not bhakti probably. We have to reevaluate. In this shloka, in the second chapter, 2.8 or 2.7, that is the shloka when there is a turning point in the Gita. Arjun formally accepts Krishna as his spiritual master. He is no longer his friend. This is a karpanya dosha, apahata swabhava. So in that shloka, in the purport, we want to read two lines from the purport which are written by Prabhupada. So this is Gita, second chapter. The Gita has just started off and right there, Prabhupada writes these very beautiful lines. By nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone. Perplexity means confusion. So Prabhupada is saying, naturally if you live around in this world, the way the world goes, it will lead you to confusion. Why this is happening to me? Why not to him? Why like this? Why like that? Why does a village of simple villagers have to be submerged suddenly because of a flood of water? Why not some criminals in some part of Bombay? You know, there are some criminals who are living very nicely and are apparently very simple villagers who got drowned. Why? Why? By nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone. In every step, there is perplexity and therefore it behooves one to approach a bona fide spiritual master who can give one proper guidance for executing the purpose of life. all Vedic literatures advise us to approach a bona fide spiritual master to get free from the perplexities of life which happen without our desire. So many problems in our life, we never wanted them to be. They are there. How to get out of it? Not by solving them. By first understanding how to solve them. If you just attempt to solve them, your approach may not be right. And instead of reducing those problems, you may end up multiplying those problems. It's very important to undergo training and then approach solving any problem. So for spiritual life, guidance is very important. Most of us know Dhruv Maharaj's story. I knew Dhruv's story even before I came to the Society of Devotees. Most of us see Dhruv Maharaj's story as a story of purification of desire. Many times the example is given how Dhruv wanted the highest material position in this universe, and then later he says to the Supreme Lord Prishnigarbha, Lord Vishnu who comes in front of him, he says, actually I don't want anything now, all I want is the association of devotees, and while staying in the association of devotees, I want to continue to hear about you. This is the only thing that he asks. So we know the beginning. The beginning is how Dhruv was a small child, he got insulted and so on. And the end is, the Supreme Lord gives him his darshan. You know what we miss out? Generally when we speak on Dhruv's story, we miss out the middle part. Does anybody know what is the middle part of Dhruv's story? The middle part of the Dhruv story is the sadhana, the 6 months of intense purification that Dhruv underwent between the insult and the pure devotee consciousness. And what triggered off these 6 months of intense sadhana? His meeting with Narad Muni. Think about it, Dhruv is such a passionate kshatriya. At the age of 5, out of a small insult, his father did not allow him to sit on his lap. This small boy is ready to go to the jungle. Now in today's times, you know, jungles are almost encroached by humans. So when we, in today's context, we understand Dhruv went to the jungle, we may not understand the full significance of this line. Go to some remote jungle. Go to Chitrakoot or some place like this, which is even today a jungle. Imagine in Satyayuga, what must be jungles like? What kind of ferocious animals must be living at those times? In those days, going to the jungle unarmed meant getting devoured. So when Uttanapad, his father heard, my little boy, in the morning this incident happened and evening he's gone. Actually he had accepted, Dhruva, I will never see him back again. So you must appreciate the determination of Dhruv, what a passion he had. He is ready to face all that difficulty. And to such a passionate boy, who wants to get the highest position in this world, meets Narad Muni. And Narad Muni, he is a devotee. What will come out? Bhakti. He wants to give him bhakti. But it is like, you know, trying to light a fire to a wet wood. Have you ever tried on a hike or something? You take a wet wood and try to light fire. First thing is, it will never catch fire. Second thing is, it gives you a lot of irritation by way of smoke. Wo to seekhta hi nahi hai, aapko takleef hoti hai. Similarly, if you see the conversation between Narada and Dhruv, Narada says, what are you doing here? He says, if you want to tell me something good, you tell me. If not, stand out of my way. This is not Narada telling to Dhruv, this is Dhruv telling to Narada. If you want to help me, you help me. If you don't want to help me, thank you very much. I'm on my way. So, Narada Muni, he understands there's a lot of determination, if used properly, can give him something that is very rare. Narad Muni wants him to undergo a paradigm change. Yes, you retain your determination, but not for that position. You retain your determination to get Vishnu. But as he tries to convince Dhruv, it's quite a challenge. But Narad Muni is also not an ordinary person. He likes challenges. So he gives very good, you know, there's a nice conversation between Dhruv and Narad Muni. Narad Muni suggests something, Dhruv refuses it. It comes back to Narad. Narad again gives something. In this way, very, you know, in a very refined way, in a very expert way, in a very Narad way, yes, he finally gives it to him. He says, you should chant this mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And based on this mantra, combined with austerities, Dhruv achieves his success in 6 months. It means, this also shows the amazing quality of a spiritual master. A spiritual master, you give him any person. You give him an ordinary materialist, you give him a passionate person, you give him an ignorant person, you give him somebody who is very interested in natural way of living, you give him a pure devotee, you give him whatever, the end product is always a very good devotee, a very sincere devotee. Yes, depends on how much interaction he has with the spiritual master. So, we should understand that when you meet an exalted devotee, and if you receive guidance, somebody as low as Dhruv, who just wanted purely a material place, he is now on that planet which is not destroyed even when the whole universe is destroyed. Dhruv Lok, the North Pole. So this is a story of a big transformation in association with a devotee. The Bhagavatam is 18,000 shlokas. Just like we have a Chatush Shloki Gita. The Gita is 700 shlokas and 10.8 to 10.11 is considered to be the essence of the Gita. So it is Chatush Shloki Gita. Chatu means four. This is Chaturmas. So similarly, just like the Bhagavatam is 18,000 shlokas, there is a Chatush Shloki Bhagavatam. This is 2.9.36 to 2.9.39. Aham Evasam Evagre. It starts with that shloka. So in 2.9.39, which is the last shloka of this Chatush Shloki Bhagavatam, in the purport, there is a very nice paragraph which we'll like to read. So Prabhupada is writing, these are Prabhupada's words. Therefore, the devotional service of the Lord with perfect knowledge through the training of a bona fide spiritual master is advised for everyone, even if one happens not to be a human being. This is confirmed in the Garuda Puran as follows. Kitapakshi mriganam cha harau sanyasta chetasam urdhvam evagati manye kimpunar gyani nam drinam. Translation. Even the worms, birds and beasts are assured of elevation to the highest perfectional life if they are completely surrendered to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So what to speak of the philosophers amongst the human beings? And now Prabhupada continues the purport. Listen very attentively. Therefore, there is no need to seek properly qualified candidates for discharging devotional service to the Lord. Let them be either well behaved or ill trained. Let them be either learned or fools. Let them be either grossly attached or in the renounced order of life. Let them be liberated souls or desirous of salvation. Let them be inexpert in the discharge of devotional service or expert in the same. All of them can be elevated to the supreme position by discharging devotional service under the proper guidance. So whoever you are, we should never feel hopeless. If you are ready to take proper guidance, perfection is waiting around the corner for you. Is there a small chance somewhere that because of my misfortune, I stay away from the association of devotees? Kya karu? Main Siberia mein rehta hoon. Yahan ISKCON ka center bhi nahi hai. No spiritual master visits here. It is only me. Can I advance in devotional service based just on my own sincerity? Yes, Krishna mentions in the Gita, Tesham eva anukampartham aham agyana jamtama. Krishna in this shloka mentions that I am there in everyone's heart. So if somebody is very sincere and serious about devotional service, I guide him from within. In the purport, Prabhupada mentions, sometimes it can happen that somebody is illiterate and he comes to ISKCON or any other spiritual society, there are so many books and all, but he can't read. Somebody is from another country, he can't understand the local language. So he is there, connected to a spiritual society, but he cannot read, he cannot understand. To such a person, Krishna guides from within. What is the difference? The difference is, this person is sincere. How is he sincere? He is sincere because he is staying in the association of devotees. He wants to join a society. Now, because of his past background, he is not able to benefit from the sound. He is not able to benefit from the words. But, he does not go away. He sticks. So, if Krishna sees that sincerity, you may not understand a single word, still you will advance. Krishna will guide from within. This should not be used to justify our laziness. If we have a facility, if we have some devotees around us, if we stay in accessible part of the temple, at least whenever possible, physically we should come to the temple. Physically we should go to the association of devotees. Physically we should attend counseling meetings to advance more and more. That special facility is not for everyone. That special facility is when somebody is really intensely crying out for association, but it's not possible. For those of us for whom association is possible, we do not have a choice. We have to take shelter of that association. There is one sannyasi in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. At one point of time, he was facing a lot of spiritual upheaval. Some events in his life led him to question, is there really a necessity for a guru? Can I not just chant the Hare Krishna mantra and worship Krishna and go back home, back to Godhead? Lord Chaitanya has given us this Hare Krishna mantra. Why is there a need to take shelter of a bona fide guru? Certain events, certain genuine events. So this person, he actually locked himself in a room. And he took all Prabhupada's books. And he literally, for 6 months, he went through each and every small word in Prabhupada's books, trying to search for one line where Prabhupada, somewhere in some corner, mentions, even if you don't have a spiritual master, it's okay. Krishna will take you back home, back to Godhead. Surprisingly, and much to our good fortune, after going through all Prabhupada's books, everywhere he found, we must take shelter of a spiritual master. We must associate with devotees. He did not find a single line in all of Prabhupada's lines where it was mentioned, it's okay. You can go back home, back to Godhead without the association of devotees. One devotee told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I am having a lot of problems with devotees. I want to stay alone. Prabhupada told him, if you want to go back home, back to Godhead alone, you are insane. You are crazy if you feel that you can advance alone. We are dependent on each other. There are two people who influence our lives to uplift us. So one is a teacher. In Sanskrit, he is called a shikshak. And another person who uplifts us is the spiritual master. In Sanskrit, he is called guru. Now, what happens is, in today's times, you know, this term guru is very much abused. You have a management guru, you have a dancing guru. I don't know what other gurus exist. So, you know, we have to understand that when there is so much emphasis on guru tattva, when there is so much emphasis that, you know, all of us, adau guru padashrayas, in the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami says, adau, first thing is, you need the ashray of a guru. You need the ashray of somebody who can guide you. So if we don't have a clear idea, sometimes we can feel anybody who claims to be a guru is a guru. In some communities in India, the surname is also guru. So you know, outside his home, he'll put a nameplate, so and so guru. So you say, oh, he is my spiritual master. So I would like to speak a little bit on what is the difference between a shikshak and a guru. In English, what is the difference between a teacher and a spiritual master? So we have a series of comparisons. So pay attention if you can. A teacher takes responsibility of your growth. A guru makes you responsible for your growth. A teacher gives you things you do not have. A guru takes away things that you have but do not require. A teacher answers your questions. A guru questions your answer. A teacher helps you get out of the illusion. A guru destroys your illusion. A teacher requires obedience and discipline from his student. A guru requires trust and humility from his disciple. A teacher clothes you and prepares you for the outer journey. A guru strips you naked and prepares you for the inner journey. A teacher sends you on the road to success. A guru sends you on the road to freedom. A teacher sharpens your mind. A guru opens your mind. A teacher gives you maturity. A guru returns you to your innocence. A teacher is a systematic thinker. A guru is a lateral thinker. A teacher will punish you with a stick. A guru will punish you with compassion. A teacher instructs you on how to solve problems. A guru shows you how to resolve issues. A teacher to a pupil is what a father is to a son. A guru is to his disciple what a mother is to her child. One can always find a teacher, but a guru has to find us and accept us. A teacher leads you by the hand. A guru leads you by his own example. A teacher instructs you. A guru constructs you. When a teacher finishes with you, you graduate. When a guru finishes with you, you celebrate. So this is the concept of the guru. This is the spiritual master whom Rupa Goswami is saying, Adau Guru Padashrayas. If we meet a person like this, and if we take shelter of him, success is assured. Not anybody and everybody who has a beard, who has long hair, who has some beads around his neck and claims, I am your guru, take my shelter, give me your donation. We have to have clear concepts. This is all necessary for us. When we sometimes talk of a guru, when we talk of guidance, some of us may feel uncomfortable because our understanding or our experience rather of guidance is micromanagement. If we have received guidance from somebody in our life, in our home, some senior person, at our office, if we have a senior, who goes into every small detail of what we are doing. Actually, that kind of guidance is suffocating. So if somebody is into, you know, he calls you for a meeting, let's say. And then he says, what do you think? And then when you think and when you present a proposal, he shoots it down. So then sometimes you wonder, what for this farce? Why did you call me to a meeting? You already know what is the conclusion of the meeting. You just wanted to, you know, appear that I discussed with my subordinates. Sometimes we can have bosses like that. So with this background, when we come to a class and when we hear Guru ki seva zaruri hai, Guru ka ashray zaruri hai. So last time I took guidance, this person practically snatched away control of my life from me. He took over the autopilot of my plane, life of my plane. Yes? Matlab abhi main mera plane hai, main chala hi nahi raha hu, koi aur hi chala raha hai. So if we have had such experiences in our life, and when we hear such paradigm change, that we need to take guidance for every small thing, then we misunderstand that this guidance is about, should I drink water before the class? Should I drink water after the class? Should I take a blue colored bead bag for my beads, or should I take a pink colored bead bag? No, this is not the guidance that we are talking of. Yes, we are talking of guidance of principles. We are not talking of guidance of small, petty details. So we should understand maturely that what is this guidance that is being stressed in our scriptures? This guidance makes us independently thoughtful. So what is this concept of independently thoughtful? We are given space. We are given support to think. So we should become thoughtful. We can never accept anything blindly. Blind acceptance will never make us make progress in life. But many times in the name of being thoughtful, we go off in an independent direction. So think of an animal, a cow, which is tied to a tree in some village. So there is a rope or there is a chain around the cow's neck, and it has sufficient length for the cow to move around. So the cow is free, at the same time, bound up, protected. Or sometimes there is a fence around the cow, which allows the cow to remain safe. It does not allow the cow to go across far away into the forest near the village. So I would say that the worldly guidance, the kind of guidance that we think of, which is very suffocating, is when you tie a cow to a tree with a rope which is barely having any length. So, you know, the neck of the cow is almost touching the tree. This is not the guidance that we are talking about. We are talking of guidance, spiritual guidance, independently thoughtful guidance. is the guidance that you free a cow, but you don't free a cow in such a way that it is dangerous for the cow. The fox can come and eat it. You free the cow, but you also provide a fence around. So yes, for all practical purposes, there is freedom. But as soon as there is danger, the fence says, no, not beyond this line. So when a mature spiritual master, when a mature spiritual guide gives guidance, he does not suffocate the person who is receiving the guidance. He gives him space, but he also gives him broad principles which will protect him and not allow him to wander off into the field of mistakes. It comes with practice. But this is very important. In car races, if you want to really win the race, you have to really drive fast. If you need to drive fast, you need to focus on the road. But the route is very difficult. So in all these races, there is another person sitting next to the driver. He is called a navigator. This navigator has a big map in front of him and he tells, right, now there will be a tree, take left. The navigator is not even looking at the road. But he has to focus on the track, he has to focus on the map. And the driver does not look at the map, the driver is focusing on the road. So we could explain it in this way, that a disciple is like a person who is driving the car on a very rough road. He needs to focus on the road. He can't look for directions. And a spiritual master is like somebody who helps him navigate through the difficulties of life successfully to reach the lotus feet of Shri Shri Radha Gopinath. All of us have seen some people, they have a sacred thread around their body. Have you seen? In temples, the pujaris will have a sacred thread. Yes? So, in the Vedic culture, there are 16 samskaras that a living being should undergo. So one of that samskar is the Upanayan samskar. What is Upanayan samskar? The Upanayan samskar is that samskar when a small child is initiated and then he gets a thread around his neck. So now we wanted to discuss that he's getting a thread around his neck. Why is it called Upanayan? Nayan in simple Hindi, in Sanskrit means eyes. So what eyes have to do with getting a sacred thread around your body? Who gets a sacred thread? Who is initiated by a spiritual master, guru? It means, if you see somebody having a sacred thread around his body, this person has accepted the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. He is under guidance. This is the concept. Shishya ban gaya abhi hai. Kal tak ek chota balak tha. Ab ye shishya ban gaya hai. Upanayan means, now he has the eyes of the spiritual master. Till now, this small boy had his own eyes to view the world. Now, after this thread, he is in formal connection with a spiritual master, with a guru. Now, he has the guidance of a very exalted person. Now, he will see life through the eyes of a spiritual master. He got another set of eyes. And that's why the sacred thread ceremony is called Upanayan Samskar. Most often than not, in the first 1 or 2 months after we come to ISKCON, we roughly understand kya sahi hai, kya galat hai, what is right, what is wrong. Is it not? The rest of our life, in devotional life, is a struggle to stick to what is right and to avoid what is wrong. Is it not? That is the struggle for most. I mean, 1 or 2 months it's knowledge. Acha, aisa bhi rehta. Oh, this is how it is to be done. But after 1 or 2 months we understand, half Dandavat there, full Dandavat to Prabhupada, keeping him on the left side, then turn around, full Dandavat to Radha Gopinath by keeping them on the left side. Why we keep them on the left side only, why not on the right? All these technical details we understand. After this initial period of getting knowledge, then the real struggle starts of actually doing it, sticking to it. So in the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, Krishna speaks about the sword of knowledge. Krishna says, in the Gita also uses this concept in the last part of the second chapter. He says, with the sword of knowledge, cut the ropes of attachment. He's telling Arjun, you are bound up with the ropes of attachment. Cut do inko. So the sword of knowledge can cut the bonds of attachment, but the sword of knowledge is very heavy. Yes? So all of us, in the first 1 or 2 months, we get the sword of knowledge, and now we want to cut the bonds of attachment. But as we try to lift that sword, oh my God, this is very heavy. I remember one statistic. There was a movie called Mughal-e-Azam. some 40-50 years back. And one particular actor, he played the role of Akbar in that movie. So, for authenticity's sake, the producers of that movie, they actually went to some museum and they took out, you know, the vest. When you fight a war, there is an armor, a metal cloth, if you can call it, to protect the actual helmet and the actual armor of Akbar. And this person, you know, he's a very well-built person. And he was sitting on a chair and they said, you know, we want it to be authentic. We actually want you to sink into the mood of Akbar for this movie. So they put on the armor on him and they put on the helmet on him. And he said, okay, now let's start the shot. He could not get up. He was really heavy. He was very strong. He's the father of Raj Kapoor. Could not get up from his seat. That was how heavy it was. Yes. So something like that, you know, the sword of that warrior, you know, if somebody wants to lift the sword of Shivaji or something, I'm sure it will be a struggle. It's not as easy as that. Similarly, here we are talking of Jnana Sina. Asi is a sword and Jnana is knowledge. All of us here sitting here, we have Jnana Asi. But when we try to lift it, say, yes? So who will give us the strength? Balram. The first expansion of the Supreme Lord Krishna is Lord Balram. Why is he called Balram? He gives bal. He is himself supremely powerful. And what is his bal? His bal is not his physical bal. His bal is spiritual bal. Lord Balram is called Balram because he has immense capacity for spiritual strength. And that's why Lord Balram is the original spiritual master. He is the original guru. He is Guru Tattva. So Balram has spiritual bal. And with the help of Balram's spiritual bal, we can lift Jnana Asi, and then we can cut the bonds of attachment and then we can progress in life. If we don't have Lord Balram, at least we should have the representative of Lord Balram. Because he is carrying the same bal, he can empower us. See, realization in spiritual knowledge is a gift. We can never achieve realizations. Spiritual life is more about receiving than achieving. So any sincere sadhaka, when he does his sadhana sincerely, Krishna gives him, Krishna gifts him a realization. So, there are, Krishna is infinite. There are infinite realizations that anybody can have. So, any one of us and every one of us, we are sitting here, depending on the sincerity that we have, all of us can have individual realizations on the same topic. If we start speaking on the topic of chanting, I can speak based on the sincerity that I have in my chanting, and in reciprocation to that, Krishna has revealed certain things about chanting to me. His Grace Gopinath Chandra Prabhu is sitting here, such an amazing chanter. Every day you see him there. Once he closes his eyes for the first round, it is only when he gets up, he opens his eyes. Because of his sincerity in chanting, he'll get different realizations on the same topic of chanting. Multiply that with as many number of people are sitting here in this temple hall. If there are 1200 people sitting here, 1200 people can have 1200 different realizations on the topic of chanting based on the sincerity that all of us have individually in our sadhana. Yes? It means there is never a situation where we feel, I know enough. Depending on the sincerity of a devotee, he has his realizations that have descended on him. And if we take guidance from that person, in a moment, we get that guidance, we get that realization. Now the question is, will a very advanced devotee who had to struggle hard for getting a realization, share it with somebody like me who is not sincere, who did not struggle? That is the question. So that's why in 4.34, Krishna gives us the process. How to approach a guru? Till now we discussed guru is very important. Guidance is very important. In 4.34 in the Gita, Krishna says, Tad vidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshina. Very specific words Krishna uses. Krishna says, please approach humbly, pranipatena, then pariprashnena, then you ask a question. So when you ask a question to a guru, First is humility. Then you ask. And after getting an answer, do seva. These three combined form a successful question and answer session with a spiritual master. Asking a question to a spiritual master is not just the question part. Excuse me, I have a question. That is only 33.3%. Rest 66.6% is pranipat and seva. Pranipat is before the question and seva is after the question, after we receive the answer. Now, interestingly, Krishna uses the word tattva darshi. Krishna does not use the word tattva jnani. So what Krishna is saying, the self-realized devotee, he has seen the truth. And if you approach a person who has seen the truth, you approach him in pranipat, you approach him in surrender. So somebody who has seen the truth, it means he has struggled to see the truth. It means he is very advanced. Why would he reveal the realizations that he has got after intense sadhana to an unworthy person like us? That is why Krishna uses the word pranipatena. If you go with your broad chest and say, excuse me, you seem to have done very good sadhana for the last 20 years. You seem to have a lot of good realization. Would you like to share a few realizations with me? He won't. Yes? Because he knows you will misuse those realizations. But if you go humbly and say, my dear sir, Prabhu, Maharaj, you are so advanced, you are so dear to Krishna, I am struggling. I need a navigator in my life. Would you like to tell me at least one instruction that will be for my benefit? He'll tell you. So that's why humility is very important in spiritual life. We can access something very high based on our mood. In the Mahabharata, it is mentioned, the Kauravas and the Pandavas, they underwent training in martial arts under the same teacher, Dronacharya. One day, they were all sitting and dinner was being served. They are the princes, royal princes. So everyone has a plate in front of him and there are lamps that are glowing. Now on that particular day, this is childhood, a strong wind suddenly blew and the lamps blew off. So everyone, you know, you want to see what is there in your plate. Especially if you are a prince, there are very fancy dishes in your plate. So you want to check out. So it was noticed that everyone else stopped eating. There is only one person who continued eating. He was Arjun. He stopped for some time when he saw that I cannot see my plate. But then he touched the plate and he understood, I have a quality of touching. And just based on my touch, even if there is no light, I can continue eating. And he finished his meal. By the time they lit the lamps again, he had already finished the meal. So Arjun understood, light is very important for me, but I have this quality of going ahead with my duties even if there is no light. That night Arjun took a very special decision. That night Arjun went into the forest. He did not sleep that day. He took up a bow and arrow and started practicing with that bow and arrow. He understood, I do not have to see the target. If I just have an idea, I can shoot a target even in darkness. This is one skill of a Kshatriya. Dashrath Maharaj did this, although it was a mistake. He shot an arrow on the basis of sound. So at least there was some light in Dashrath Maharaj's case. Here there was no light. So Arjun started practicing archery in the dead of the night. And one day, or rather one night, Dronacharya noticed this. So he asked Arjun, what are you doing here at this time of the night? He says, I want to become an excellent archer. So you have taught me how to shoot in the daytime, but one day I realized I should be able to utilize my capacity to work in the night time. Just like I ate in darkness, I should also learn to shoot in darkness. That will make me a better archer. So I started practicing on my own. Now there are two perspectives to this. The guru could have said, how can you be so independent? You should have waited for that lesson. It is coming 2 years from now. 2 years from now, I was going to teach you how to shoot in the dark. How come you are so rebellious? How come you are so independent minded? But Dronacharya was a mature guru. Dronacharya saw the intensity, the eagerness. Dronacharya said, very nice. He said, I'm overcome by your eagerness to learn the art of archery. You have such an eagerness at night time when you are tired after practicing during the daytime, instead of taking rest, you are practicing. So he says, I will make you the best archer. That is the time when Arjun, you know, his fondness, Dronacharya's fondness for Arjun increased not by seeing his skills. Arjun was not the favorite disciple of Drona because his hairstyle matched with Drona. Arjun was the most favorite disciple of Dronacharya because he had this eagerness. He was in the right mood. So it is said, some things Dronacharya did not teach even Ashwatthama, even though Ashwatthama was his own son, because Ashwatthama never showed that kind of mood. So this mood is something that captures the Guru's heart. So even if the Guru is very exalted and we may be very low, if we have the right mood, realizations will be shared one after another. It's not a question of our qualification. Generally, we have seen sometimes some disciples tend to imitate the spiritual master. They laugh like the spiritual master. They walk like the spiritual master. Sometimes they move around like the spiritual master. But, you know, is that what is necessary? If we learn how to laugh like somebody, does it mean that we'll have the same qualities like him? So what does it mean to follow the spiritual master? To follow the spiritual master, we'll have to understand what are his words, what is his message, what are the values that he wants to inculcate in us. And somebody who sticks to those values, he may look different, he may talk different, he may actually walk different, he may do everything differently. But that is the channel through which the spiritual master's mercy will flow. One time, this is something like 80, 90 years back, the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was such a firebrand preacher. There were so many Gaudiya Mats opened throughout the country. So one such Gaudiya Mat was opened and the deities were installed and the first aarti was to be performed. And the first aarti has to be performed with the spiritual master. So the invitation was sent to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, please come for the aarti. And that day, incidentally, he got late. So now these are the days where there was no cell phone, yes, there is no messaging. Now the muhurta is passing. The aarti has to start. Guests have come. But the spiritual master is late and you don't know how late he will be. Where is he stuck up? Is he ill? Is he not keeping well? Should we go ahead? Should we stop? You are in complete darkness. So the person who started that particular Gaudiya Mat, he saw one very senior disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was somewhere nearby. So he went to him and pleaded to him. He said, Maharaj, our Guru Maharaj is not here, but you are just like our Guru only. You are my God brother, but you are so advanced, you are like my Guru only. You have taught me so many things. So because our Guru Maharaj is not there, in his physical absence, please do the aarti. Very important function. And yes, it was an important function. So this particular disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he accepted that proposal. And he started doing the aarti. And as he began the aarti, in walked Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And when this person, he's offering aarti, he saw his Guru Maharaj there. His heart is trembling with fear. The fear is, did I commit an offense to Guru? Will Guru Maharaj feel I am trying to usurp his position? Guru Maharaj jo seva karna chahte hai, ab main wo karunga, aisa unko galat to nahi lagega. The heart was not like that. The mood was not like that. But the fear was there, is it not? So, he continued the aarti, you can't stop midway. And after the aarti, this disciple, he did not have the courage even to show his face to his guru. He just ran away from there. And he went to another god brother, who's also one of the senior god brothers, and said, please, go to Guru Maharaj and ask him what was his reaction, what is he feeling about me. Imagine, you know, you are a very dear disciple of a spiritual master and it appears that you want to take his position. That's the end of your spiritual life. Yes, to always remain a servant is what we have learnt. If you try to replace the master, that's the highest, is it not? That's like, you know, traitor. The highest violence is when you rebel against your own country. Similarly here, the disciple is rebelling against his own spiritual master. So this other disciple, he went as a representative of this person, he went to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and asked him, Guru Maharaj, what did you feel? So he said, in devotional service, there are no mistakes. This was the reply. So he said, my disciple who was doing aarti, he is doing devotional service only, na bhakti kar raha hai na, aarti hi kar raha hai na, kuch galat to nahi kar raha hai. So he said, in bhakti there are no mistakes, there is no ill feelings in my heart. So now, the question to be asked is, in bhakti there are no mistakes, this Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is saying. In our bhakti, in our devotional service, is there anybody here who wants to raise his hand and said, in my years of bhakti, I am practicing for so many years now, I have never done a mistake, because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada is saying there are no mistakes in devotional service. How to understand this? The way to understand this is, the spiritual master is so broad-minded, his vision is so kind, he understands. Even if there is a mistake, physically there is a mistake. Yes, there is a mistake. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati understood the mood of his disciple. He understands it is only in an extreme situation that this person did aarti, which was actually meant for me. He does not want to take my position. So he gave a blanket statement without going into the fine details. So how long did you wait? Did you wait 5 minutes? 5 minutes is too less a time. You should have waited for 15 minutes. He didn't speak any of those details. He didn't speak, you should have done only halfway. As soon as he saw me, at least then he should have handed it over to me. Nothing like that. He just spoke, in devotional service, there are no mistakes. There are no ill feelings. So it is the guru's mood that he always pardons the disciple. But can the disciple ever think like this? In my service to my spiritual master, there are no mistakes. I can do whatever I want. I can behave with my guru the way I want to. And there are no mistakes. Because I am doing bhakti. I am chanting Hare Krishna. I have a kanthi. I have tilak. So this is this wonderful coexistence of two different moods in a relationship. The guru always pardons. The guru always says there is no mistake. And the disciple always evaluates his mood and thinks, when I did that, what was my mood? Did I really want to rebel? Did I really not want to be in a servant mood? Did I actually have the feeling of disobeying my spiritual master? He does something, he evaluates. If he feels there is something wrong, he adjusts, he again re-evaluates. That is the responsibility of a disciple. The disciple can never say, Guru Maharaj said, everything is right. So practically also we see, even after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, so many times there were mistakes by so many disciples. But the spiritual master never took it seriously. He always saw the sincerity. He said, no, you have done it sincerely, you tried your best. It may not be the best, but you tried your best. So this is the mood of the guru, and the mood of the shishya is that, I don't think I tried my best. Actually, I should have tried the best. I think I should improve. I should go on. There are some examples that we'll quickly do, because we have approached the duration of the class. Till when do we need guidance? As a beginner, I understand I need guidance. I'm not initiated even. I started coming to the temple last Sunday. It was very nice. You showed me the way now. Now I need guidance. But another person who's sitting in this temple hall, who's been coming to the temple for 20 years, he's respected by everyone. This question can come to him. As a beginner, I was dependent on guidance. In my last stages of devotional service, as I am more or less seen as a perfect devotee by my peers, is guidance necessary for me? Yes. In the beginning, a child, when he's given food, he's even taught to move his jaws up and down. Yes? You know, do like this. You have to chew it. You can't just swallow it. Because a child, in all its innocence, sometimes if you give him some food, he can actually swallow it without chewing it. So the first teaching to the child is, you chew it. Then the teaching to the child is, you chew it properly. Certain foods you don't have to chew, you just suck them. Certain foods you just, slurp them, you just lick them. Certain foods you chew them. Certain foods are very soft, so no need to go on chewing more, just like you did for the last time. Do you understand this? So the first teaching is, you chew. No matter what I put in your mouth, you chew. The second teaching is, there are different types of food. So for some foods, no need of chewing. Bhai, kal to bataya aapne. चबाना चाहिए, नहीं वो कल की बात थी, आज हम आपको नई सीख दे रहे हैं. टुडे द फूड दैट आई एम गिविंग यू डज नॉट नीड चूइंग, डे आफ्टर टुमारो आई विल गिव यू अ फूड विच नीड्स अ लिटिल चूइंग एंड सो ऑन. एज ही ग्रोज अप देन द फादर एंड द मदर टीच हिम दिस फूड इज नॉट गुड इन दिस सीजन, दिस फूड इज गुड इन दैट सीजन. यस, दिस इज अनदर टीचिंग, सेम टॉपिक. एंड probably if he gets some disease, then he is also taught to not chew, not eat. Yes. So let's say, you know, somebody likes some puri sabji. Sorry for giving an outdated example. Yes. Nobody eats puri sabji now, I know that. Something contemporary. Let's say pav bhaji. Yes. I've always seen that, you know. As soon as I say pav bhaji, the people light up. So let's say somebody likes pav bhaji, but he's suffering from a disease, ulcer or something, where he should not eat such spicy food. The same mother and father will teach him, I taught you how to eat, I taught you what to eat, what not to eat, I taught you, you know, what not to eat in what season. Now my final teaching to you is how to stop eating. I was saying that when I was 6 months old, not eating. Yes. The same teaching the father and mother or somebody else, the doctor has to give at the end. It means there are different kinds of teachings. The first time when we come, you know, somebody gives us a bead bag and says, just chant. Just put your hand like this and say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. So we say, bus. It's a bus. Simple. So I never knew so simple. And then as you start chanting, then he says, you know, there is something called as Sakshi Mala. बोले ए जप माला तो सुना है, साक्षी माला क्या है? बोले वो जप माला के अंदर नहीं रहती है, वो जो बीड बैग है उसके बाहर रहती है. बोले ये क्यों है? टू काउंट हाउ मेनी राउंड. यू मीन टू से आई शुड चैंट मोर देन वन राउंड? सो यस यस यू गॉट इट. देन यू टेक ए साक्षी माला, देन यू सी द साक्षी माला हैज 20 बीड्स. सो यस आई हर्ड इन ऑल क्लासेस 16 माला, 16 माला, 16 माला. दैट 20 कहां से आया? हैव यू ऑब्जर्व दिस ऑन यूर साक्षी माला? There are 20, so then you have why 20? So they say, this 16 is one circle. But on some special days, like Ekadashi and all, you can also increase the circles. So you can do 4 times 16. So really? I didn't know that. Then as you start doing, okay, on part of Nirjal Ekadashi, on Srila Haridas Thakur appearance, day disappearance, day I'll chant more than 16, 64, like that. Then you say, Prabhu, I saw you chanting 64 rounds. Towards the end of those 64 rounds, you are dozing off. So, you know, quantity is not just sufficient. There is something called as quality. You know, so now you should put efforts in quality. So, it's increasing. Yes? So, one can never say, and this is just a small example. A disciple, when he becomes surrendered to a guru, the first teaching is some simple elementary teachings. But as he goes on ahead in his relationship with his spiritual master, he will understand there is always something available to learn. Whenever you interact with a senior devotee, there is always something which you never knew. And then you wonder, how come this person knows so many things? He does not know so many things. He understands so many things. He's not read unlimited books that he keeps on telling you every time something new when you meet him. It is there in the heart. It is his realization. It is his understanding. So anytime you go in front of the spiritual master, there is always something that he guides you, and you always thought I was an authority on that subject. So no, there is always something more. Yes, but believe me, it is not something intentional. It's not that the guru always keeps something secret. Bole agle baar tu aayega nahi na, sab kuch dunga to. Sometimes it can happen in the material world. A physics teacher may not reveal all the secrets of physics in the class. Why? Wo shaam ko private tuition class mein kaun aayega fir? A spiritual master is not like that. He does not hide. He gives whatever he has at that moment. The next time you approach him, he has more realizations. He has a steady relationship with Krishna. He has more realizations. Next time you go, again, he gives everything that he has. And next day you come, again there is something which you never heard. So how come he has so many realizations? He has because he is steady devotee of Krishna. We'll just take one small example from Lord Chaitanya's life. As Lord Chaitanya was staying in Jagannath Puri, Jagannath Puri is very near to Konark. Konark is the sun temple. So one day, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he saw the ocean and he thought it is Yamuna out of his intense attachment to Vraj. He ran into that Yamuna, the ocean, jumped into it, and he almost floated till Konark. So Konark is a long distance away actually. It means he must have floated in the water for something like at least 1.5 or 2 hours. And all of us know when we float in sea water, it's not actually pleasurable. Yes? The skin bloats. The salty water is not good for the skin. So by the time they found him in Konark, it's 18 miles north of Puri. So he's missing from Gambhira. People are searching for him. Swarup Damodar Goswami searching for him. Where did he go? And this searched all of Jagannath Puri. He would sometimes be at Simhadwar. They went there. He was not there. So the search party at midnight is searching for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They are not able to find him. They reach the seashore. Meanwhile, there is a fisherman who's fishing at night. He got late. And he threw his net into the ocean and he caught a big, huge, golden, shining fish. What was this fish? This was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it is described, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying in Jagannath Puri, he would enter three dasha. Dasha matlab state of existence. So these three dasha are antar dasha, bahya dasha and ardha bahya dasha. Antar dasha means he would go deep into his mood as Radharani. He would almost faint in ecstasy. He would speak something which was not understandable to ordinary people in that attachment to Krishna. So in this state, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in water his body got elongated. It almost seemed like a fish. His arms extended 4.5 feet, 1.5 cubits. There was 6 inches space between his joints. So every joint of his finger, there was 6 inches space. The knees, 6 inches space, roughly. So think about it, already he is like 6 feet tall, Sonara Parvat, golden mountain. And now he's elongated. But more than the length, you know, he was looking really strange. Somebody, you know, whose limbs are like elongated in a strange fashion. So when this fisherman pulled in the net and he saw this golden fish, he was happy that he got a big catch. But he also thought it was some kind of a ghost. It looked very strange. So barely recognizable as a human being, golden color and strange appearance, he could not make out. And then as he was taking out that net, he happened to touch the golden fish. Now in fear, because it was a ghost and it is already midnight, this fisherman, this happens in Puri, although they eat meat, but they are great devotees of Lord Jagannath. So this devotee, he's a devotee, but he's a fisherman. And when he saw that ghost and he became a little fearful, he started chanting Narasimha prayers. So praying to Lord Narasimha. And by a mistake, when he touched Lord Chaitanya, the ecstasy of Narasimha prayers increased. So usually if it is a ghost, then the fear goes away. Because Lord Narasimhadeva protects you from fear. In this case, you know, the shivering that he was experiencing, it multiplied. So he thought, you know, my last shelter was Lord Narasimhadeva. Now this ghost appears to be very strong. That my Narasimha prayers are having no effect when I touch this ghost. So he is actually shivering in ecstasy. This was Prem. He is touching the body of Lord Chaitanya as he is in Antar Dasha. As he is in that mood of love towards Krishna. So he comes to the coast and he gets off the boat. And now he is, you know, chanting this Narasimha prayers, but he can't control himself. He's dancing and, you know, he's jumping. He's in happiness. But there is some doubt, you know, is this happiness or am I mad or the ghost has overtaken me? What is happening? Then by that time, Swarup Damodar Goswami has come there. And they look at this strange person. And usually, you know, devotees sometimes, you know, they appear really to be strange. One time I was chanting. When I was working, I was chanting, I was returning from my office. And I had a bead bag around my hand. So one of my office colleagues, he saw me chanting. This was at one railway station. I was waiting for a train. He came to me and said, "Kya hua?" So in a very solemn voice, in a very concerned voice, kya hua? So I said, I don't know kya hua. Everything seems to be normal here. So ne haath ko kya hua? So I said, what? So he said, why do you have such a big bandage? You know, you have covered your hands. So then I removed the mala. I said, I have not covered my hands. This is my mala and I am trying to chant. So he said, oh. But it was looking very strange, you know. So this devotee is chanting and dancing in the middle of the night. And strange incidents would happen usually when Lord Chaitanya would touch somebody or somebody would see Lord Chaitanya even. They would get that Krishna prema. So somebody who touches Lord Chaitanya in that state, it is mentioned he was at the bhava stage. Bhava stage is one stage below prema. Adau shraddha tatha sadhu sango bhajana kriya anartha nivritti and so on. The second last stage is bhava, which Bharat Maharaj was in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. After a lot of exalted life, this fisherman got the same bhava stage by touching Lord Chaitanya. But what is there in his heart? His heart is, oh, I am overcome by a ghost. So as he's chanting and jumping, he meets Swarup Damodar Goswami, and Swarup Damodar Goswami happened, asks him, why are you like this? Why are you appearing to be so? He said, you know what? There is a big ghost and I caught that ghost, and even though I'm chanting Narasimha prayers, this ghost is so powerful that my Narasimha prayers got overwhelmed. So what to do? And you have to tell me something. So Swarup Damodar Goswami understands. He's much better than Sherlock Holmes. So he says, he speaks a lie. He says, I'm an exorcist. I'm a tantric. I can remove the ghost. Take me to that ghost. I'll give you a solution. He wants to ascertain whether actually it is Lord Chaitanya. So now the whole search party, they go with this fisherman who is still possessed by a ghost to that ghost. You know, that big, strange looking body. Swarup Damodar Goswami understands this is Lord Chaitanya. And as this person is shouting, so is this a ghost? Please remove my ghost. You can understand the anticipation, you know, the anxiety of this person who feels that, you know, how big is this ghost that Lord Narasimha's prayers did not work. Yes, he is really concerned. Swarup Damodar Goswami takes him and chants some mantras and gives him a tight slap. He almost is shaken out of his slumber, and then he tells him, you are not possessed by a ghost. You know what? This is the ecstasy for which so many sages are hankering for. This is the highest stage of ecstasy in which you realize Krishna is there in my heart and you experience emotions for Krishna. So think about it. The topic that we were discussing was, till what time do you need guidance? Till you reach bhava stage, you need guidance. You will not be able to understand, is my ecstasy ecstasy or am I possessed by a ghost? You need a devotee to tell you, this is not a ghost, you are enjoying life. This is the goal of life. Yes? So even when you reach the bhava stage, you need guidance. Yes? So there were some other points also. We'll just, one last point. Usually, if you read the Puranas and if you read the Vedic literature, you will see that the disciple has to search for a guru. But in the Kali Yuga, Lord Nityanand, who is Lord Balaram come again, the Adi Guru, he understands nobody is interested in spiritual life. So Lord Nityanand gives up all that the style of working and he goes searching for disciples. He goes home to home and he says, please chant the names of Chaitanya, Krishna, Mata, Krishna. He actually goes and knocks on people's door and says, please chant, please become a devotee. Now, so, can we just rest? बोले चलो अभी तक तो गुरु ढूंढना था, अभी नित्यानंद प्रभु ही आ रहे हैं घर घर और बोल रहे अरे हरी नाम लो हरी नाम लो. No, even if नित्यानंद प्रभु knocks on the door, you still have to open the door. That much we need to do. So yes, Lord Chaitanya's mercy is flowing. Srila Prabhupada has distributed it far and wide and his followers are instructing us by their own example. Still, that minimum effort of accepting that mercy into our lives, open the door of our hearts, let the mercy flow in. So we'll quickly revise what we discussed. The first topic was what was bhakti. The second topic was why is guidance necessary. Third is who can give us guidance. Fourth was till when in our life is guidance necessary. And fifth was some examples. We had some example like Vyasadeva, even though he wrote all the Puranas and all Vedic literature, still he did a mistake. He did not glorify the Lord enough. And then his guru, Narad Muni, he comes and says, you have not sufficiently and repeatedly described the glories of Krishna. Now you write your final offering, the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Vyasadeva is like a multi-PhD. He has written all Shastras, all knowledge, architecture, medicine, all Vedas has been written. So can you imagine the pride of Vyasdev potentially? You meet one PhD outside and how much pride he has. Vyasdev has written down all knowledge. He's a PhD in every imaginable field of knowledge. But when his guru comes and says, now Narad Muni is not a PhD. Narad Muni is a simple person. He travels from place to place. Narad Muni bhajaye veena Radhika Ramana naam. So disciple is a multi-PhD. And a guru comes and says, you know why you are despondent? You know why you are sad? Because you did not glorify the Supreme Lord. He says, yes, thank you. And then he writes the Srimad Bhagavatam. So till what time do we require guidance? There is no time when we don't require guidance. We require guidance at all times. So thank you very much for your patient listening. We'll end here. Thank you so much for being a very good audience. I'm grateful to all of you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai.